Monkey, I love it. I love it.
And Saturday mornings, you have to start with some Pisswanky, or it just ain't right. It just is not. It's not a good way to start the weekend. So we got you got your Pisswanky for breakfast. So there you go. Good morning. It's hot and cold. I'm Tom. It's 8:08 on Saturday morning. Oh, the text line 601-207-4478. The phone line 1-800-966-1039. So I don't know what was going on this week. I just don't know. But everybody I've spoken to, hopefully not you, but everybody else, myself included, has had not a great week. I don't know if astrology is coming into play, or it's God has vengeance wreaked down upon us. I'm not sure what it was, but it just was. It was a challenging week, and I was doing some work in the utility room. We have a utility room. And it's where we got a water heater and we got a well pump. And the wire for the well pump, which is the UF cable, underground cable, comes up in the middle of, not the middle, but in the slab, not against the wall. So I wanted to get I'm actually tiling the floor in the utility room. So I wanted to get conduit on that cable. So I disconnected the cable. It went into the slab, went out to the pump, right? So I disconnected the cable from the control box. It's the three-wire. For those of you who are in the well pumps, I know some of you out there are. excuse me, it was a three-wire cable. Well, it is a three-wire connection. This plot thickens here in a moment. It's a three-wire pump. Has a start winding and then a run winding. So I disconnected from the box. And what it's got is technically a two-wire UF cable going in. So it's got a two-wire cable would be a hot, a neutral, and a ground. Now, in an underground cable, the ground is insulated. In the hookup, technically a three-wire connection going to the pump would be four wires. It would be the start winding, the run winding, a neutral, and a ground. So, but we only got three wires hooked up. Okay, it works. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. So, I disconnect it. I get the conduit all in, into the box, put the box back, reconnect it, nothing. It went around. Now, the wires were in the box, everything's color-coded. The wires weren't color-coded. Now I'm beginning to doubt myself. So I'm going round and round. Round about, and I started 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Round about 7 o'clock, you know, I'm trying to figure out, test the pump, check the windings. And the pump and the wire to the pump all seemed okay. And logic would say that something going on with the control or the connections. So I can't check the control. So finally I give up, I say, okay, tomorrow's another day. I get home about 7 o'clock. I confer with an engineer friend, and we're trying to sort out, because I have no experience working with three. I do have experience working with three-wire pumps about every 5 to 20 years. It isn't that frequently. So, and I'm online trying to figure out what's going on. So, okay. First step, let's replace the control. Okay. So I get home at 7 o'clock. I'm going to look up online, Home Depot, you got the control box. They have the control box. They just don't have it in the store. Okay, that's not helping. So, looked at Lowe's. Lowe's had them. And I looked at one of my online plumbing supply houses I deal with, and they had them too. And they were like $1,500. It's computerized. Duda does everything but tire shoes. I don't want that. I want the basic control like I had. It was $84 at Lowe's. They had it in stock. I was running on adrenaline at that point, and it was 7 o'clock at night. Hadn't taken my afternoon nap even. I said, you know what? I'm going to Bangor. So I went to Bangor, went to Lowe's, got the control. Then I hit Home Depot because I needed some tile. Got the tile. And I have to say, usually I do my shopping at these stores at 6 a.m. on Saturday morning. Going at 8 o'clock on a weekday night was okay. So that was pleasant. And they're open to 10 o'clock, so that was kind of cool. So I had a head start yesterday. So I got back down there, and I'm 50-50. We're going to be replacing the pump. And there's a story with the pump. Now, the person who had the property before me, and I've owned the property for almost 20 years, was not a – I don't even know how to define – I don't want to be rude. I don't want to be crude. But the guy didn't know what he was doing. You know, you're supposed to have four-wire – conductor, you use the three-wire. Okay. So, and there's another part to this. I'll share it in a minute. Anyway, I put the control in. Pump came on. Thank you, God. I had figured out the windings properly. Got the wiring sorted out. Pump came on. Great day. I thought, well, maybe, you know, we got a pump issue. I've had the property almost 20 years. I know that pump's been in probably for a fair bit of time beyond, at least 10 years. So, and Thursday night, before I came home, while it was still daylight, so let me take the cap off the pump housing and look down in there. So I did that. I looked down in there, and I see an underground cable coming out of the water, going through a hole in the casing of the well underground. And there's no connector bushing or anything. It's just a hole in the side of the well housing going out underground a couple of feet. So obviously this is not right. And for those of you who don't know, when you run wire from your submersible well pump, usually you have a three-conductor or a four-conductor cable that's bare cable that transitions to underground cable. But that goes out the top of the casing and goes down the outside in a piece of conduit just to get underground, then you can run underground cable. So, and it's got a pitless, and I was wondering if it even had a pitless adapter. I knowing what this guy did, it, but there is a pitless there. So, and I was mentally prepared that we might have to pull the pump yesterday, which we didn't have to do. But Pete and I have conferred, and I think before the snow flies, we're going to change the pump out because it's on borrowed time. So, I got to take a break. I go way over here. There's more to this, and there is probably a couple lessons. I don't know. Should be a lesson. Yeah, it was a lesson. We'll be right back. It is Hot and Cold. Stay with us.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie Heath, babe, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites.
More Hot and Cold with Tom Gozy coming up on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, the voice of Maine.
Yeah. 8:20, it's Hot and Cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. So we decided we're going to change out the pump. And because, you know, Pete needs to have this experience. And I'm just hoping everything is good on the pitless adapter and it all goes smoothly. But it's We'll clean up, we'll change, repair the wiring, so to speak, do it the right way. We'll have to dig down around the well casing to get the wire sorted out, seal the hole. So, I can't believe I'm saying this. Seal the hole in the side of the well casing, which I assume maybe it's caulked. Knowing the guy who did it, I have a feeling he might have used latex caulk or something stupid, but we'll find out when we dig into it. But that was the one system in this whole property I've got that we haven't changed or done anything to. So I made the first step, I guess, in that I at least looked. I just ignored it. I mean, it's working, and, you know, we're busy trying to make a living. So, no, but here's the thing. So I got looking, you know, anticipating 50% shot, maybe I need to replace the pump. I mean, who knows? I just want to make sure. It didn't look like it. The resistances on the pump windings were okay. So it looked like it was okay. But I'm just kind of, you know, spitting in the wind here, just trying to make sure I'm covering my bases. So go ahead and I'm at home and I'm looking at the, you know, the controls. I look up pumps. I look up the pump at Home Depot. You know, they have submersible pumps. I said, well, you know, I can get the pump right off the shelf, Home Depot. It's $450, half horsepower. I think what was in there or is in there is a third horsepower. Half horsepower would be more than adequate. And then I just looked at the reviews, and they were awful. And I had done this a couple of years ago, and I kind of forgotten because I had to replace the pump where I am now 2 years ago. And I had forgotten the shopping experience, but looking at the reviews, the pumps don't get great reviews. So then I looked at my friends at FW Webb who sell Gould's pumps, and they had them in stock for the same price. So I don't know if I assume I'm paying wholesale, so maybe it's more if you go in there. I think you might be able to buy retail with them. So we'll do a Gould's pump when the time comes. And those are on the shelf. You could check inventory. The beauty of being online in 2023 or probably even 2001 was that you could check inventory on a lot of companies. I do this with car parts now. If I need to order a car part, I can call and talk to the guy, or I can look it up myself online and get the get whatever it is I need. I could place the order, tell them where I want to ship it, if it's going to me or one of my mechanics, and we're in business. So that's good. So it's going to be fun. I'm kind of looking forward. You know, on a cooler day, it'd be perfect to pull a pump. It's just I don't want to be hung up for 2 days, you know, because we need this little bit or that little bit. So, but I mean, changing a well pump's not a big deal if you have the right equipment. And if you have Pete to help. Pete was into it. Thursday was Pete's day off, and he ponied up. He's out there helping. So we had a father-son afternoon. So that was good. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Let's go to the phone.
We have a father-son.
Turn your phone down, please. Hello? Hi?
Phone number is 1-800.
Yeah, sir, please turn your phone down. Yeah, your radio down?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, I was wondering if you know of anything that will remove the glue from duct tape that has been put on an automobile.
Oh, God, that's my nemesis. I'm looking at a car this week at auction. They duct taped the bumper cover on. The one thing it takes elbow grease, you know, acetone does a good job, but it tends to dull the paint a little bit. I found that a denatured alcohol doesn't mess up the paint quite as much, but it needs a little more elbow grease.
Yeah.
So one of those will work. It just takes time.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. I'll give it a try.
Yeah, good luck. I don't envy you, and I'm not looking forward to it if I buy the car with the duct tape on it. I mean, I regularly, you know, we buy a lot. We go through a lot of cars. Obviously, we sell cars. And a lot of folks will duct tape stuff, you know, especially bumper covers. They're plastic. They get knocked around. If they don't, and they have a very simple connector that holds them in a lot of times. And people will duct tape them. And, you know, all duct tapes, the duct tape has is a pretty strong temporary repair. A couple of things go on here. One is when you go to take it off, the adhesive stays on whatever you stuck it on. And it is challenging to get it off. It's just messy. So, like I say, I've used acetone, and you can use acetone. It's a better solvent for the adhesive, but you're going to have to buff it out to get the shine back on your paint after you're done. The alcohol works better in terms of not dulling the paint, but it takes longer to get it off. You might be able to use some kind of citrus-type cleaner like, I'm trying to, is it Zud? Z-U-D? Is that it? No. But there are citrus, Gugon, that's it. That might work. Again, it might mar the paint. So I would try just on a small area to see how it works. But it just takes time. And it's frustrating, you know. I get a little flustered, and I will stick to it till it's done. And unfortunately, a lot of times people go crazy with duct tape when they do duct tape something onto a car. And it ain't, it ain't necessarily pretty. So, in staying with the pump deal, the genesis of the whole episode was I was getting ready to tile the floor in the utility room. So I after I got everything working, and I had it working first thing, it was fast. I just had to hook up the wiring and everything worked. I needed to level the floor just a little bit, so I had some leveling compound that. Fortunately, had not become a solid city. It sat for a couple of years, but it didn't become solid. So I mixed that up and leveled the floor. And I had actually cut some tile yesterday to get ready. And I might get some tile down on the floor today, which would be like a major thing. I've been years planning this project, so might actually get it done. That'll be kind of nice. The last weekend, I said I was going to paint the porch, and Marty the painter told me not to use a spray gun, which I used, and he was right. It worked fine. It was a Wagner spray gun. I picked it up a couple of years ago just because I thought it would be faster, and it is pretty fast. It's annoying to use. It's heavy to use. And it oversprayed everywhere. I didn't mask as much as I should have, but it was it did a good job, and the porch came out really nice. But I think that's the last time I'm using it. Marty said to use a small roller, and he was right. So thank you, Marty, for that advice. I'll use small roller next time. We're still getting ready to do the carport deal. For the solar panels we'll be putting up. And the first step was to get some trees taken down. And they were big enough trees leaning in the wrong direction. And I just had hard stuff done, so I wasn't going to be cutting any trees. So I had tree service come in this week, and they did a good job. A Timber Bear tree service in, I think they're in Searsport. They're just over the line in Searsport. And they did a great job. So, and I've got firewood now, by golly. So he says, you want stove length? Absolutely. So once the carport goes up, the firewood will get stacked in the carport, and all will be right with the world. I started planning out the design. Now, I've got probably 2,000 pounds of solar collectors that I'll be putting on the roof. So I've got to make sure I've got the right structure to support all that. So that's been a major episode in terms of figuring that out and building trusses and all that. And it won't be terribly expensive, and it'll be kind of fun. And I'll have storage space, too. So speaking of storage, we got to store some commercials right now. When we come back, we'll take your calls or messages at 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. Joseph, what have you got to say?
Seems I've got to have a chance. Every night I have a strength to impress by the way that you have been left you on my own. So let's see. I've got to leave before I start to scream. Oh, so not for you to touch the key.
Hot and Cold with Tom Gozy coming up on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, the voice of Maine. Now, back to Hot and Cold with Tom Gozy on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, the voice of Maine. To talk with Tom, call 1-800-966-1039. That's 1-800-966-1039.
Hot and Cold Saturday morning, 8:36. You know, when one banjo isn't enough, two is even better. Yeah. All right. So we're back. Let's see. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. They want to tell you about my friends at General Appliance over in Brewer on Center Street, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. If you're looking for appliance parts or service, off-grid stuff, used appliances, refurbished appliances, over there, Center Street's where to be. Phone number is 989-4341. That's 989-4341. All right, let's turn that down. We're going to hit that button there. We're going to click that thing there. It's a lot that goes on to make this radio show work. This is not, it may sound, I may sound like a simple person to you, but there's a lot that goes on behind the scene. You wouldn't believe, you know, there's a whole crew. There are people in the background here just making sure this all works right. It's not easy. Let's go over to line two. We can do that. That's easy. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes. I'm calling about undercoating a Prius.
Yes, sir.
So I thought I'd call the Prius guy and see what he recommends. I just bought a 2019 Prius with 25,000 miles on it.
Good for you.
And but it's pretty low to the ground, and I'm thinking that it's a beautiful car, and I'd like it to last a long time. So I'm thinking, I've heard you talk about undercoating before, and I'm looking for your recommendation.
Yeah. Two things. One is I like to use lanolin-based products. And there's two products that are lanolin-based. One is wool wax. The other is fluid film. They've both been around for a while. They've got a good track record. I have amended my recommendation slightly in using these products, and that is that I've told folks for years, every other year, just to check the car. I think it's probably more important. I've seen a couple that have gone a couple of years, and they've had some serious issues. So I would say every year just to check it for a touch-up. On a new car, relatively new car like this, you're not covering really probably any rust of any consequence. So initial coating this time of year in particular, early autumn, is a good time to do it. And then just check it once a year. You probably have a garage do it initially. And then the touch-up you can do yourself if you want with a spray can or two probably would be adequate. And it's going to be the front and rear suspension and the rear rocker area right opposite the back wheels where stuff is going to splash up. Those are the areas that seem to take the biggest hit.
Okay, and then do you have a recommendation on who to have do that? Because I don't have a lift or anything.
Yeah, so you just have to check around with local garages where you are. In my area, I know Searsport Automotive does it. They'll do wool wax. I think they do wool wax, and they also do wax oil. Wax oil is more expensive. I like the wool wax. I think that's a good product.
Wool wax?
Wool wax, yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. And fluid film is the other one.
Fluid film. They're basically interchangeable. They're very similar products.
Great. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good luck. Congratulations on your car. That's a good car. We have been selling we have a couple of Priuses out for sale. And unfortunately or unfortunately, I'm not sure how it plays out, but we're selling them before they even get out for sale. I mean, we've had a couple go out in the past, I think three in the past week and a half, that never made it to the front line where they have a sign that says for sale. They've been pre-sold. Which is wonderful, and it's kind of frustrating, too, because I don't have the cars out for sale. But it's all good. It all works out in the end. And it gives me the opportunity, if we're kind of caught up, be that good or bad, I can tile the floor in the utility room, he said, optimistically. I'm doing it in steps. I'm not doing the whole thing at once. I'm just doing it in steps. So we'll see how that goes. I think I told you I got the old pellet stove working that we had in our office, which was kind of too big for the office. And I ordered a part. And here's a lament. I buy a lot of stuff online, a lot of stuff online. I'm always ordering car parts. I'm searching for used car parts. And I'm buying a lot of new stuff. And I ordered a remanufactured brake accumulator for a Toyota Highlander hybrid. I found a company in Florida who remanufactures this particular component. It's something that tends to go, and found somebody. It was not cheap. So they mailed it, USPS. And it came to Maine, and it hit southern Maine. And I don't know what they're doing in southern Maine. I don't even know I don't even know where the southern Maine postal thing is. But it hits there, and I've had this happen multiple times now, and it goes back. It landed yesterday. I'm tracking it, right? I need the part. I've been waiting for the part. I've got a mechanic waiting to put this part in. And the part is in Maine, and then it says it's delayed, and then it's late arrival and late arrival. And next thing I know, it's in Lakeland, Florida yesterday morning. I emailed the guy, the vendor. He says, yeah, it just got back here. They said it was damaged. There's nothing damaged on the box. He sent it back to me yesterday. I've had this happen so many times, and either it comes like in 2 days, or it takes 3 weeks, regardless of where it's coming. I mean, you know, I'll buy stuff from California and have it in a day or two. I mean, not 2 days. If it's on the East Coast, sometimes it could be a day, and I've got it. And then I'll buy something like this one from Florida or from the Midwest, and it's 2-3 weeks. And it's U.S. Postal Service. UPS and FedEx don't seem to get into this. They have terms for this on computers where a kernel panic or something, where it just kind of keeps rotating. You know, the wait thing keeps rotating on the screen. It used to be Apple had the little pizza. It never does what it's supposed to do. Well, the Postal Service, for all their revamping they're supposedly doing, it ain't quite there, guys. And I was looking yesterday. Fortunately, I couldn't find the – yeah, I could file a complaint, but it was – I just wanted to send a terse note about the fact that it hit Southern Maine. So Southern Maine, and I think maybe I'm wrong, and maybe you could correct me, especially maybe if you work down there. Do we have pot breaks at the Southern Maine Postal Sorting Facility? Because it's legal. Do you go out and have some weed and then come back and just ship stuff back to the sender? I mean, holy mackerel. All right. I'm okay. I've calmed down. The part's not here. It's in, it's it's en route again. I don't have the tracking number this time, and I don't want it. It's just going to upset me. But we'll see how quickly it gets. It'll probably come right away. But it was a little. There were some well chosen words yesterday. Now, I wasn't sure. It said late in arrival. And I thought, well, maybe it fell under the table or something, or sorting machine. And then yesterday, mid-morning, it said arrival in Lakeland, Florida. I'm like, I hope that's a mistake. Why would they send me that notice? And I emailed the guy, and I got back an instant response. Yeah, I just got it. Oh, good. I'm sure you could use it more than me. So he gets, I guess he gets to eat shipping again, pay shipping all over. Fortunately, it was an expensive enough thing. I think he probably can cover the shipping, but I don't know, maybe he paid for the slow boat, the pot break shipping lane. I'm not sure. Man, I tell you. So I mentioned, before I forget, mention anything, today in Palmyra, Maine, you know where Palmyra is. I mean, this is a hopping town, Palmyra. Palmyra, Maine, where Butler is opening a hardware store at their location in Palmyra, and sitting no more than 10 feet away from me right at this moment at 8:46 a.m. is Michael Dow, who is going to be there live doing a live remote from 11 to 1. And I see, I've watched him load up big 104.7 T-shirts and notepads. So I tell you what, if you need some good clean clothes, or you got to take notes, you want to go see Mike. Because it's gonna hang on, you just stay right there, Mike. Oh God! You know what? He's gone. He's on his way to Palmyra right now. I thought he's no longer 10 feet away. The light is out in the studio, so he's got the notepads and the T-shirts for 104.7, and he's going, and it's worth the trip. If you're in the area, who's nicer than Mike Dow? I don't know anybody nicer than Mike Dow, and that says something. I know some nice people. I do. I really do, and Mike's one of them. So from 11 to 1 today, Ware Butler in Palmyra, in the hardware store, Mike's doing a live remote, so you want to stop in and say hello. Because it's worth the trip just to meet Mike and the folks at Ware Butler. And that's certainly a stop right there. And then you go to Walmart just down the street if you need some underwear or something. So you won't need T-shirts anyway. Got that going for you. Okay, so phone number 1-800-966-1039, text 601-207-4478. We got some messages. Maine Postal Terminal in Southern Maine is located off Broadway in Scarborough. You can go there and get your package if needed. Yeah, I want to drive 120 miles, 150 miles to get my package. another one, pot is still, in theory, prohibited for federal workers, including USPS. Not sure how much is enforced in Portland, though. Yeah. I'm always amazed, you know, I had my day in college. I admit to that. A little different. It was 50 years ago, okay? And that was different than it is now. What amazes me, though, is I'll go to the Hannaford. We go, you know, we got a grocery night. My wife and I go shopping. And you'll walk through the parking lot, and you're getting whiffs of some weed. And do you need to smoke weed before you go grocery shopping? Is that a thing? I'm not quite sure. Or the other thing is I'll be driving down the road, and I'll be behind somebody, and like, what's that smell? Is that person in front of me, are they? Oh, boy. I'm glad I'm not a cop having to sort that one out. Anyway, again, phone number 1-800-966-1039, text 601-207-4478. So I've got the pellet stove fixed, and I'm actually, well, it's almost fixed. I'm waiting for a part, and it's one of the, it needs a vacuum switch. So on a pellet stove, when you turn it on and the combustion fan is blowing, it actuates a vacuum switch, which indicates that it's exhausting the smoke from the stove, and then it will turn on everything to start the fire. I don't have that. I had to replace it. And this is another one of those things that is somewhere between God knows where and the end of the earth. And I am just a little bit flustered. And I'm tracking, and I also have some banjo hooks. Now, I could deal with the vacuum switch. I can wait for banjo hooks, hooks and nuts. If you don't have your banjo nuts, you're in trouble, man. So those have been taken forever, and those were coming from close by too. And I have a feeling they're going to go back to wherever they came from, which is maybe an inappropriate thing. I don't know. Speaking of banjo, a quick banjo story. In a moment of weakness, there's a company out there makes a unique banjo called a Neckville banjo. And I had one years ago. It was actually a purple banjo. This guy who was inlays on fingerboards for guitars, banjos, he had done them for Gibson. He was doing them for Gibson at the time I dealt with him. And I had him make a neck for me. And he had a banjo, a Neckville banjo, that he put together. And for some reason, he had a golf club that was purple. And he thought that was a great color. So he made the banjo purple. And I was without a banjo at the time. And God knows that's a sin if ever there was one. So I grabbed this banjo, not because of the color purple, but because of the construction, which was very unique. And I had it, and I traded it in for something else. All well and good. Well, fast forward. In a moment of weakness, somebody has a Neckville banjo pot, which is a wooden rim and a wooden tone ring, which would be what you put the plastic head over. But in between these two pieces is about 50 ball bearings. And you put the ball bearings on the wooden rim, you put the tone ring on top, and you would put it in the banjo. Well, I'm not sure why I bought it, to be honest, except it was cheap and it was Neckville, which guy makes great products. So I get the thing, and the ball bearings are in a little box, and the woodwork, everything's beautiful, beautiful piece of hardware. So I'm going to put the ball bearings on. The rim has a little track. You put the ball bearings there, put the tone ring on top. Well, I start putting the ball bearings on, and they immediately start rolling off because there's no outer edge that holds them. The top piece, the as it's called, the tone ring, has a little lip on it that would hold it in place. Well, you can't do it. There's a piece missing that I don't have that would hold them in place. I don't have that, though. So I've got to jerry-rig a way to do this. So during the week, I went down to the basement, and I had the jerry-rig, and I had put it together. Was I just made a thing of a sleeve of paper, taped it together to hold the ball bearings in place. There's an inner lip on the wooden base, and then I have a sleeve on the outside to hold the ball bearings in place. I did that, got all the ball bearings in, got the top piece on, it's all together, and I taped it with with painter's tape, you know, the blue painter's tape. So I go down to the basement. You know, it was hot and sticky all week, and I've got the heat pump water heater in the basement. I'm going to go down to the basement, play banjo. I got one banjo in the basement. So doesn't everybody have banjo in the basement? And I'm going to go play the banjo. So I go down the basement. I'm looking at the on my workbench there, the banjo workbench. There's this tone ring with the tape on it. And I'm like, you know what? That tape at some point, that adhesive is going to start to mess up that nice woodwork. I had to put that together. And I had all the bits to put it together. So I start putting it together to and undid the tape. And I'm tightening down the assembly, and I hear plop, plink, plink, plink. The ball bearings are falling out everywhere. As I was tightening it down, it kind of went off to one side and opened up enough for the ball bearings to come out. And they're going everywhere in the basement. And I'm running around. Well, first I got to try to secure it so it doesn't. And I got it back on the workbench. And they're still coming out like liquid. Anyway, I got it back together, and now I'm kind of upset. I go upstairs because it is it's hot and sticky up there. And guess what? I got it back together, and it's got the tape again. But I got to take a break. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning. You knew that. We'll see you in just a little bit.
More hot.
It is 9:06. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning, and it's the voice of Maine. You knew that, though, didn't you? And our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. And so, you know, in laying, you know, this week, weather-wise, was kind of much. And it actually wasn't bad on the coast. I think it was reasonably tolerable. I've had the occasion to be in Bangor several times, or inland, even inland in Bucksport this week, and I couldn't believe the difference between being down right on the coast in Stockton Springs and being inland at all. It was just oppressively humid. The temperature was, it was warm, but the humidity just was a killer. And I guess, so the alternate scheme here is that we're going to, we're going to be in the scenario where we have a lot of rain for the next 4 days, or rain at least. I guess that's always it's going to be cooler at least. So we got that. Let's go to the phone and see what's going on. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom. I've got a question for you.
Sure.
I've got an old metal roof.
Mm.
I don't know whether considered steel or galvanized, but it needs to be painted.
Yeah.
And it's rusty. Most of the paint's off it.
Mm.
Do I need to prime that first, and what's the best treatment for that roof? Should I use Rust-Oleum or what?
There are coatings specifically for metal roofs, and I don't remember if, and I think it goes from varies from product to product as to whether you have to prime it. I know Home Depot has a metal roof coating. It's in the obviously in the roofing aisle. You can check, but these are latex-based products, and they basically roll on, or and of course maybe brush on if it's standing seam. But it's pretty easy to do. I've had very good success. I've used a number of different ones over the years. I might take a couple of coats, especially if it's not primed. And like I say, I'm not sure all of them require primer, but if you got some rusty.
Right.
Roofing, you might need a couple of coats to seal enough so you can then be okay.
Usually when we get a winter, we get a lot of snow that's close together. Mm-hmm. Well, I have to use a snow rake, or I end up getting an ice dam. So anyway, I was wondering if the latex could hold up with a snow rake hitting it once in a while.
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I've raked roofs that have had coatings on them. I've never really done any major damage to it that I can remember. And these were roofs that I marched around on a lot, was doing work on, and I don't think we did much to mar them. They're also easy to recoat if you had to, and it's relatively inexpensive. It's not crazy money. So, right. But it's basically a thicker, viscous, like a latex house paint. But I know places like Sherwin-Williams would have it as well. But you can look online at Home Depot and Lowe's. I'm sure they have them. They sell it in 5-gallon containers, which obviously you would use. And you can roll it out.
Okay.
All right.
Very good.
Good luck. Thanks.
All right, thanks
Bye-bye.
A lot.
Yeah, and not the box store products are probably going to be white. Some of them are tintable, but you can also get places that will sell a tinted. Again, maybe a place like Sherwin-Williams might be, you know, obviously they can tint paint for you if you do need a color. White is a great color for a roof. It tends to reflect heat. It looks attractive. If you need a color, though, that is doable. And it's not out of the question. Well, let's see. We got one on line two. Good morning. No, we don't. By golly. The phone number is 1-800-966-1039. A text 601-207-4478. We'll have Pete at some point if he's not busy. We've been kind of going crazy with car stuff this week. Of course, getting cars ready. We had a number of cars that came into play this week. Most non-Priuses, though, because the Priuses, like I say, have been leaving before we even have them ready to sell. I mean, we get people grab them before we put them out for sale. They were done. we didn't sell an unprepared car. Back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
I wanted to ask a quick question about a van. I have a 1999 Dodge conversion van that I had my son buy for me down in Florida without rust. And I was wondering, is that worth undercoating?
I think so. Even though it's rust free, I'll give you an example. We have for sale a Prius. That came from Florida, not a Prius, excuse me, a Lexus SUV that came from Florida. And it's always amazing to see a vehicle from down there, how clean they are. There's no rust. And it's like, oh, this is what cars are supposed to look like.
Yeah, and, no kidding. And, unlike here.
Yeah. So I think you should undercoat it. You know, protect your investment. For what it is, that much money, and it'll make a difference.
Yeah, I know it's... The thing is faded, and it really could stand a paint job, which is seems to be harder to get nowadays. But
yeah,
but it's do they literally spray up inside of the frame and in the doors and all that when they use that undercoating?
It depends who's doing it. They can. Not everybody does. The frames, if they're sealed, excuse me, they're not getting into it. It depends who's doing it. As an example, I don't spray inside doors when I undercoat, but I'm primarily doing Priuses. We don't see a lot of door rot out on Priuses, as opposed to some vehicles. Dodge trucks seem to have a lot of issues with doors rotting. And those, I think it behooves you to have it done, you know, to get inside the door.
I think just being an older one is, and that's the only reason it's in the shape it's in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it wasn't driven in salt water.
Yeah.
So by looking at it anyway.
Sure. Sure. Well, good.
Anyway.
Sounds good. Get it done. You'll be happy.
All right. I appreciate it.
Okay.
And one other quick comment.
Yeah.
Been listening to the solar and the wind, and I've worked at numerous power plants, and the only way we're going to get power in this state is if we build another nuke plant.
Okay.
Period.
All right.
And all right. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah. Yeah. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. Got a text. How much fuel mileage do you get with a Prius? Well, the one that I drive, which is a 2007 with 458,000 miles on it, this morning, if I'm traveling on flat land, and there's not a lot of flat land here in Maine, you know, I could be pushing 60 to 70 miles per gallon. More normally, though, if I'm not doing short jumps, like I'm driving from my house to Bangor like I did this morning, I'm getting around 55 miles per gallon on this car, which is kind of worn. And I found that older Priuses at least, if they're running okay, tend to get pretty decent mileage, maybe because everything's kind of broken in. I'm not sure. The newer, as they've gotten newer, the miles per gallon has gotten better, with a few exceptions. The Prius V, which is a station wagon Prius, gets a little bit less gas mileage. The Prius C, which is a smaller Prius, actually doesn't get as good gas mileage as the regular Prius. And the reason is the Prius C was made up of spare parts from Yaris's and Priuses, and it just wasn't as well thought out, perhaps. They're nice cars, but the miles per gallon is a little bit less. But as they get newer, they're now the newer Priuses, and I'll say maybe 18 and on, 17, 18 and on, are regularly hitting in the 70 miles per gallon range. We got to take a break here, though. It is... No, we don't want to go there. Oh, that's a good one. It's 9:16. Oh, my goodness. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning, and we'll be right back.
And cold with Tom Gozy coming up on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, the voice of Maine.
It's 9:20 here at the Voice of Maine. Okay, Martha, calm down. Jeez, dancing in the streets like that. And a guy who's not dancing in the street right now, that would be Pete. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okay, we had a hell of a week, I tell you what.
It was fun. It was nice to have something to do.
I think we had plenty to do all week. I don't think we were... I didn't feel bored all week. Did you?
No. Actually, the week went by pretty fast.
Yeah.
4-day work week. It worked well.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. We had the holiday on Monday. I forgot all about that.
Did we wind up doing something Monday anyway? Okay. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, never mind.
Okay.
I was here Monday to do a thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So, I told the whole story about the pump thing, which was great fun.
Yeah. Well, it was one of those things where, I mean, it was old enough that you kind of in the back of your mind have a feeling that as soon as I touch this, it's all coming apart.
Yeah. And it looked okay. I mean, but it had it was fragile. And I should mention, when we bought the property, which was about 18 years ago. The property was used mostly seasonally, and on the outside of the building was a little, it was the size of a doghouse, but it was kind of open. It wasn't really tight. Yeah. And the Extrol tank and the pump control was in this little doghouse. And so when we got it, it was January. So January. I built like a closet around where this doghouse was, insulated it with an exterior door so none of that would freeze. And then subsequently we built a utility room to house all this stuff. And
it's amazing how much better water stuff works when it's inside.
If you keep it from freezing, it always helps. But the control had been really exposed to the weather for God knows how long. And so that, I'm sure, did not help with its ultimate demise. But all things considered, we had it 18 years after the fact. And, you know, I got no complaints.
Yeah.
So I'm just glad it's done.
Now, admittedly, I have to point out that I pretty early on in the diagnostic process was like, why don't we just go get another box?
Yeah.
But we had to experiment for several hours.
Well, we had to make sure that was the issue, which it was, obviously. But and really the only other step is replacing the only other component really is the well pump, assuming the wire is okay. And in pulling the well pump out, we would have to replace the cable that went from the pump to the underground cable. And we don't know how long that is because we have to pull the pump to be able to measure that.
Yeah.
And that's when we do that project, which we will share with, we ought to do a Facebook. Live Facebook.
We'll do a
thing.
Facebook. How do we do that with the computer?
We'll do the Facebook. The kids do it with the Facebook.
I'll let my nephew bring over his laptop.
The TikTok. What's that all about?
He's got a Nintendo.
Yeah. So, but we have to know how long the cable is that we'll have to replace as well. And then there's some other things, some spacers that go in to keep the pump from banging around inside the well casing. Those are, I'm sure those do not exist in this well. So we will, but we'll have fun. I can't wait. Anyway, so that's all I got. It's good to talk to you, Pete.
You too. Have a good weekend.
Has it been busy this morning? It seemed like the phone was ringing when...
The phone was ringing. I wasn't here when the phone was ringing, so I got to miss that.
Okay. Well, that's good.
That worked out fine.
Yeah. That helps. We keep running out of Priuses. You delivered one last night.
I delivered a Prius last night.
Yeah.
It was a 2014.
Yeah.
It had 250,000 miles on the car, but the motor only had 65K.
Yeah.
So that was a good deal.
Yeah, it's a nice car.
And, we're down to two again.
Yeah. We just can't keep Priuses.
I got the gold one and I got the Prius C.
Yeah. And
I took that Prius C to the grocery store the other day, and I got crazy good gas mileage out of it.
Good. I just told people the gas mileage on it's not as good. That one?
No, it is. It is. It's better than the regular ones. I don't know what the deal was with that one that we had where it was lower.
Well, they are generally lower. They don't do as well. What did you get on that one the other day?
I don't remember, but I know it was better. It was better. It was like I think it was pushing 60 without trying hard.
Yeah. Good.
Like I wasn't trying to get the gas mileage up. I was just going.
Yeah. Well, can't complain about that. Let's see. We got a phone call, so why don't we take that?
Okay.
All right. Over there on line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning. I was calling to find out what your thoughts were on undercoating a brand new vehicle that still has factory paint and factory undercoating.
Yeah. That's a good question. I would let it go a couple years.
Undercoating. It's the factory undercoated it with the rubberized stuff.
Well, it's a GM vehicle and it's not really rubberized, but everything's all painted up and seems to be kind of slippery.
Yeah, I would let it go a couple of years. I don't think it's imperative on a brand new car that you jump right on it and undercoat it. I would go a couple of years and You can ask whoever's doing the oil change if they have it on the lift, if you can have a peek or whatever. If you're seeing any hint of surface rust, not, you know, obviously just minor hint of it, that'd be the time to hit it. And I'm going to say you got 2 or 3 years before you have to think really hard about it.
Because this is a, you know, a plow truck that will have a sander in it.
Oh, okay, okay. Oh, let's change this equation. If it was a plow truck, I would be doing it.
Yeah, it's going to get used.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't know if the undercoating would, you know, have any negative effects on the, you know, what comes from the factory.
Yeah. No, it's not going to affect what comes from the factory. And I would say that should be an annual thing on that kind of truck.
Okay.
And, you know,
all right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck. Thanks.
Yeah, because the plow truck's going to be front line with all the salt and sand on the road.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if I think I mentioned it first hour. On Priuses, I think in any lighter car, and, you know, a truck is pretty heavy metal, and still they're susceptible to rust like anything else. But in any small car that's a lighter vehicle, the metal is generally lighter because the weight obviously has a bearing in the miles per gallon, the economy of the vehicle. So being thinner metal, I think I've been telling people every other year, I think you need to check it every year once you've undercoated it, because it just is, you know, there's not a lot there to deal with. Mm. So to protect it initially and keep on protecting it is way cheaper than having to have something fixed. I mean, if you, as an example, on a second generation Prius in 04 to 09, if you have a rocker panel issue, you have to rebuild the rockers. It's $1,000. So if you get the truck, you get a Prius undercoated, it might be $150. Even if you paid that every year, you can go 6 years before you're into the cost of a rocker. And usually it's just a touch up, and you could do the touch up yourself probably for no more than $50 worth of undercoating. And if you had a little, just a little bottle jack or a little car jack, you could do it, you know, one corner at a time, because it's the front and rear suspension. You just want to touch up. And there's the phone for Pete.
There's the phone here.
Okay.
All right. I'm gonna see what this is.
I'm gonna turn you down a little bit.
Okay. Turn me down.
Yeah. There you go. And it's perfect timing because we could take a break. I just looking at the clock. It's 9:30. So we're gonna take the break while Pete takes the phone, and everything will be perfect. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning, and I'm having a breakdown.
You have said too much in too few years, and though you try, you just can't hide your eyes age with tears. You will stop, look around. Here it comes. 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 Here comes your 19th nervous breakdown.
More Hot and Cold with Tom Gozy coming up on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, the voice of Maine. To talk with Tom, call 1-800-966-1039. That's 1-800-966-1039.
We're back. It's 9:35. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. We head over to the fake line 3. I think we got Pete.
You still do.
All right. And Pete's on the fake line 3, not the real line 3, because real line 3 ain't doing what it's supposed to do.
It's all out of sorts. Me and the governor and all the senators, we were trying to call in. We couldn't get through.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah. So a couple of text messages here. China's biggest EV car maker is making a compact car with 220-mile range for $11,000. They sold 20 of these in Australia in an hour. Why not here? 20,000 in an hour. Not.
I was going to say 20.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Oh, boy. 20,000. Yeah, you know,
there's one aspect to that I'll touch on, and it
it's one of those things that people do get, they get very concerned about. We don't really terribly have to worry about with U.S. makers and Tesla and places like that. And that is, I've seen a lot of videos of those little, like, Chinese electric scooters that people buy on fire.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's so much an issue anymore. I think the battery technology has gone from that chemistry, which is lithium ion, the lithium iron phosphate, which is a relatively safe battery. The thing is, it's a small car. And those cars either are not, I think the car companies make more profit on the bigger cars, SUVs. Hence, we see a lot of SUVs in this market. An $11,000 electric car, even with maybe 150 miles range, would probably be a huge seller in this country. I suspect we'll see it at some point, but I'm not sure that the U.S. makers think they can make money on it or know they can't make money, but it'll be interesting to see where that goes. That is a threshold where I, and I'm sure many listeners, would say, okay, that's manageable. But we'll see.
What's interesting about the price on that, too, is there's a Chinese business strategy in sales, and they've been doing this for a few years now, where they will price something almost at a loss, if not at a loss, depending on what it is. And then they gradually, as they get market share, raise the price back up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they beat up everybody in the marketplace. Everybody drops out, and they've got it. And
remember, you used to be able to go on eBay. You could get, iPhone cases is a weird example, but you could get them for, like, $1, shipped, stuff, crazy numbers like that. And now all of a sudden they're all $30 or $35, something like that, because there's nowhere else to get them.
Yeah. So let's see. How do you get pine sap off your car? Rubbing alcohol will do it. Just make sure you clean that when you're done. Wash the car after you're done. It'll dissolve it. Probably want to do it with something like a soft cloth or a microfiber towel, just so you're not marring the paint. I love pine sap on cars. We run into that a lot. Tom, you talked about OSPO stop leak, but don't remember how you use it. It's not OSPO stop leak, it's OSPO stop rust. How to use it in undercoating. Please describe the process. We'll shop do this for older vehicles. Probably not. OSPO is basically phosphoric acid, I think you get it in a spray bottle, and I've used it. You got to be real careful with it because you're spraying acid in a spray bottle. It's basically like conversion coating. If you buy the little bottles of Rust-Oleum conversion coating, and usually you brush it on. It does a good job. It converts the rust to something like a pre-primed surface, and then you can undercoat over that. My understanding is wool wax and probably fluid film too have some kind of rust protective in it in their products. I think it makes sense if you got really crusty stuff to do something like OSPO, but you do have to wait a day for that, at least a day for it to dry, because it doesn't dry instantly, because it's kind of doing its thing with the rust that it's being applied to. But it does work. You just have to, you want to be doing it in a place where you probably want to wear some kind of mask, even just a paper face mask, because I've gotten more than one snoot full of OSPO, and look what it's done for me. So, but it is a very effective product, and it's quite economical if you buy it in, any kind of spray bottle, as opposed to the little Rust-Oleum things, which are kind of expensive. The other thing is, it's not so important this time of year, but if you were getting undercoating done in the wintertime, or even this time of year, if the car's, you should look underneath the car to see if it's dirty or not. If it is, you want to run it through a car wash or wash underneath the car to get all the dirt off, so the undercoating is getting right onto the metal, onto any rust that you have, so it's doing what it's supposed to do to protect the car. And
then don't get the undercoating
care is washed again after that because you're just going to blow off.
Well, it's not necessarily going to blow off, but I would let it sit for a while. I've got to get my car on the lift. I undercoated a couple of years ago, and it's due. And I had it on the lift last winter, and that was not the time to do it. And I'm not going to be real busy with stuff this week other than doing tiling, I guess. So I got to get it on the lift and do that, undercoat it, get it prepped for winter. It is September. I was writing a check the other day, oh, it's August. No, Tom, you missed that one.
Yep.
Yep.
1 month.
Yeah. So, so we got a lot. Speaking of autumn, we have a lot of SUVs right now.
We do. We've got a surprising number of all-wheel drive vehicles at the moment.
Yeah.
We got the three Lexus hybrid SUVs. We got two RAV4s. We got one Element that's pending. We got another Element, and then there's one that we're getting back from the mechanic soon.
Yeah. We've got a two-wheel drive Element.
Yes.
The Element SC, which is a smart car. I mean, it's a smart-looking vehicle.
SC doesn't stand for smart car, just before anybody is like,
I hadn't even thought of that. Wow.
It stands for, like, street cruiser or something like that. It's when Honda was, they were trying to market them. Like, the Elements are real big with outdoorsy people, but they wanted to market one towards urban buyers, people that live in the cities and so forth. So this one's got carpeted floor. It's front-wheel drive. I guess the steering is a little bit better. You know, the handling is a little bit better.
Yep.
And the sound system is allegedly better. I don't notice any difference. But
this came from Florida. This was a surfer dude van.
It was in Orlando, so it looked really good underneath, which is part of the reason why we grabbed it.
Yeah, and it had
undercoat it anyway.
We did. It had surfer decals, which I was going to leave on, and then I said, let's take those off. I hate decals on cars, stickers on cars, bumper stickers. I guess because I have to clean up after them. and there's always an adhesive involved that has to come off. And that's usually I they'll come off. If I lose patience, I'll use acetone, which means then I have to buff out where I did it because the acetone, as I said earlier, dulls the pain a little bit. But it does work well. But that's a nice car. I really do like it. And, you know, it's got such good ground clearance. That's a real plus in wintertime, even though it's not all-wheel drive.
So. You know what we do have that I like better than that, even, is we've got that the blue Corolla.
Oh, God, that's a nice car, too.
Yeah, I took that one to the post office today.
Yeah.
It's a 13 Corolla with 168,000 miles on it, something like that. Runs like an absolute top. Corollas are amazing. They're just the best. They're so dull. It's such a boring car. It's boring to look at. It's boring to think about. But they just run unbelievably.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a sport model, too. It's got the fin on the back.
It's got that little fin on the back.
Yeah.
Very useful.
That keeps the car down for better traction.
Yeah.
Although it's front-wheel drive. But it is a nice car, and we've had several. Well, we try to keep one in stock.
Yeah, Corollas always sell a little bit slow, but the people who buy them are always very happy with it.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay, we got a phone call. Let's go over to line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I was calling in regard to a 2012 Camry Hybrid we own. And I put it on the screen that shows the performance of the engine versus the electrical.
Yeah.
And there's a stack of 10 bars that show how much the battery is charged.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, there's always two bars that show note that it's not charged. I think I've seen it up as far as 9.
Yeah.
But is that an indication of just the charging or the life, how much the battery is left, or what does that indicate?
Yeah, it's primarily just to give you an idea what the state of charge is on the battery. It's not an indication of the life expectancy of the battery. There is normally what you want to see on any, at least Toyota hybrid, and probably any hybrid, is you want to see that those bars if they have that kind of indicator, as Toyotas do, in the center one half. So not okay. You don't want necessarily want to see it peeking out all the time, and you don't want to see it running consistently down two to three bars and not getting up. So what I'll do is if I get a car that has is low, and you know we getting cars all the time. They come from auction. They might have sat for a while. They might have run them not regularly at the auction. And I got one in the other day that it had two bars showing, and they said it had a battery issue. So I took it out and I put it into B mode as opposed to drive, and B is for stronger regenerative braking, so it tends to charge the battery up quicker. And okay, and my goal there is to determine that the battery is okay and that it can hold a charge, and then it charged right up and hung there. It wasn't, you know, dropping right down again, which would be an what we don't want to see is it going from real low to real high, up and down and up and down in a very short span of time. That's an indication the battery is acting up.
Right.
I think a 12, a 12 is in that realm. I think anything 2010 and newer on a Toyota hybrid, I think they did some changes on the battery control, which really enhanced the longevity of the battery. So I think you got a good one.
Yeah, I mean, we've been very pleased. We're averaging probably just above 38, you know, for what driving we do around.
Yep.
You know, between Augusta and Rockland, so.
Yeah, good. All right.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah, let's see. We got a text message here. What is this? I thought ball bearings were used to support things that rotate like motors. What purpose do they serve on the banjo? I didn't tell you. I didn't even know if you knew this, Pete. I had a banjo with ball bearings in it.
Okay.
You haven't seen that.
I don't think so.
I had it down the basement, and I went to put it together the other night. I went down the basement to play the banjo, and I'm sitting there looking at this thing, and I had it taped together with painter's tape. And I thought, you know, that tape's going to start messing up the wood. So I went to put it together, and the ball bearings just started falling out one by one. And then there was a cascade. The ball bearings, this goes back to something Gibson tried in the mid-early 20s. And the idea was that it made a different sound. It resonated better or whatever. And these ball bearings alternate. There's steel ball bearings and there's plastic ball bearings, so it's every other one. So you got a shiny steel one and a white ball, and supposedly it's just a different sound. I don't know. We're going to put it together and see what it sounds like. But I grabbed it because it was different, and I wanted to try it. And there it sits on my. In my basement. I've got to do a little tweaking to it still, but it's together, more or less. Anyway, that's all the banjo talk.
I had a great experience at a fast food restaurant the other day.
Yep.
Now, it's a fast food restaurant. There's two order boxes, right? There's one lane leading up to the two order boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one lane branches off into two lanes, and they alternate orders, and you go.
I wonder what store this could be.
Yeah, well, yeah. So there's two aspects to this. Is number one, a lot of people seem to like be uncomfortable with going to the outer lane.
Yeah.
They want to stick to that inner lane. They're afraid that like the staff are going to forget they exist, or they're going to break off into the ocean or something like that. So, but what will happen is people will come up the outside of the drive-through lane and just nose into that outer lane. They'll cut the line. That drives me out of my friggin' mind. And so I was in line, and I'll always, when I get to the split, I'll sit, like, back a little ways, just enough that you don't know which lane I'm taking. Because you know what I'm waiting for? I'm waiting for somebody to come up and try to nose into that line and cut. And it happened perfectly Thursday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started going. Just I could feel them. I could feel them in my periphery. And I just started. And what made it better was it was somebody from New York. So this pinched-faced lady who looked very uppity, And I just perfectly the same speed as her, and she stopped and she's looking at me confused. I gave her a look with the hand up, where you go, where you kind of toss your hand up like you're throwing confetti in the air.
I never do that. I never do that.
I did one of those. Like, where are you going? Trying to cut me off. So then she had to reverse to go get at the back of the line where she should have been to begin with. And I could see the older people in the car behind me laughing. I did it for all of us.
Yeah. Well, thank you,
Don't
Pete.
Try to nose in. Don't try to nose in. That's so obnoxious and pretentious.
Yeah.
Just get in the line and wait your turn. We're all getting the same slop, okay?
Well, yeah, you kind of wonder if in fact the two lanes or the two stations where you place your orders actually is any faster than a single lane.
Yeah, well, they used to do them. It was just, when you hit that box, they would take the order. But I think they found there was too much, people cutting each other off as the two lanes merge back into one because everybody's afraid that they're going to get kicked out of line or something. I don't know what it is. People get very panicky in the drive-thru.
Well,
so now they do it so they'd alternate. You'll notice whatever lane is getting the order taken, the other lane gets their order taken next, then it goes back and forth.
So why bother to have two?
It probably isn't actually faster.
Yeah. So this is infrastructure they do not need. Got a text
message. We're solving the world's problems right now.
Somebody said profanity on my VOM WTF. What did you say? You said friggin'.
What did I say?
Friggin'.
Oh, yeah, I said friggin'. That's cool. You could say that.
You can?
Here's the thing about profanity is I don't really believe in bad words so much as bad intentions. So it's interesting because if you say, oh, fudge, like in Christmas Story, eventually the word fudge will just take over that intent.
Yeah. It's an invective.
Frankly, I should be allowed to swear on the radio.
It's an invective, and
it's an invective.
Whether
the word I was
whether
about.
You're invecting with an actual profane word or not, the thing
is invective a word? Did you just make that up?
No, I didn't. That's actually a word. Somebody, I just heard the F word. I just heard the F word with no 5-second delay, no apology. No, not on this station, you didn't.
Is that the same person?
Yeah.
I said friggin'.
Yeah.
I said that drives me out of my friggin' mind. I think maybe you're, maybe one slipped in there. If I said the F word, somebody else back this person up and tell me.
Yeah, you did not.
I think you would have caught it.
I would have caught it.
I think they owe me an
apology. I know the invectives.
You're pretty good about listening for that, so.
Yeah, I've had a lot of practice, is what it is. That's what. I had practice on Thursday, I think, when we were doing that pump thing. Yeah.
Yeah, we said a couple. There were several bad words that got said on Thursday.
Yeah. So, but anyway, the interesting thing to me about profanity, as long as we got a minute or so left here.
As long as we're talking about profanity.
It's kind of fun to research the use of these words. And if you go back, say, 200 years, the words that people would use trying to be profane, like you son of a goat or something like that.
Old-timey profanity slang is really a great thing to look up.
It is. I just love it. Unfortunately, not all of them have made it through. As some
people are like, a pox on you.
Yeah. I remember when I was in grade school and we were taking English, and speaking of invectives, one was pshaw, P-S-H-A-W. Did you ever learn that in school?
Was that an actual that was considered profanity?
Well, I don't know if it was profanity, but it was an invective.
I've heard it before. I've old pshaw.
Yeah. So, anyway, old pshaw, we're out of time.
Old pshaw.
Oh, God. This is quite the radio program we got going here. Anyway, we got to go, Pete. We're out of time. See you later. Everybody out there in Radio Land, have a great weekend. I hope it doesn't rain on your parade today. And enjoy the cooler temperatures. We'll see you next week.
He doesn't interest me. Love the life that I lead. I've got a pocket full of miracles. And with a pocket full of miracles, one little miracle a day is all I need. T. Rubble's more or less, be you're the me. when the sun doesn't shine. But there's that pocket full of miracles, and with a pocket full of miracles.
This has been Hot and Cold with Tom Gozy. Tune in again next Saturday morning from 8 to 10 for more Hot and Cold on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, the voice of Maine.